Welcome back to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm Beth Ruyak. It has not been easy to track the quickly changing dynamics and alliances and the fighting in northern Syria, but people here have friends and colleagues and loved ones there, not to mention the national security and political interests that many have in what's suddenly happening. In the studio with me to talk about this is Dr. Keith Wattenpah. He is professor and founding director of human rights studies at UC Davis, which is, by the way, the largest human rights studies program in the UC system. It's always a pleasure to have you
in the studio.
Thank
you, Beth. It's wonderful to be here.
So this is complicated.
Yes.
Is it unfair and inappropriate to say that this new eruption began with President Trump's withdrawal of troops, or can we pinpoint that as a specific turn in history?
I think that what President Trump did gave the green light to the authoritarian, democratically elected authoritarian leader of Turkey to invade northern Syria to solve what he considers his Kurdish problem. And it's now set off both a humanitarian problem, but also it will be an ongoing challenge to our national security and just the safety and the suffering of an enormous number of people in the region over the next 5, 6, 10 years. I mean, it's something that was completely avoidable as well.
Why do you think he did what he did?
I can't read this president's mind. I don't think anyone really can. I think more in terms of what we need to do to address the current situation, but also more broadly, who will really benefit or which states will really benefit from the decision that the president has made here. I'm very concerned that we are looking at the possibility of genocide in northern Syria. We've already had the first hints of it as Turkish-aligned Islamist militia death squads have been attacking and killing Kurdish politicians, mostly women politicians, and also the direct targeting of Christian minorities and others in the region. I'm concerned that the Kurds had to make a true deal with the devil allowing assistance and the participation in this movement of Russian and Syrian forces across the Euphrates River into northern Syria. Bashar al-Assad is an unrepentant war criminal, and there's been tremendously important reporting from the New York Times that Russian military and air forces have been directly involved in the bombing of hospitals in parts of Syria. So we're looking at a humanitarian disaster, a threat to our national security, but also this is part and parcel of a larger abandonment of central key American values and principles. And it's not just the war in Syria. It's not just turning our backs on the Kurds and abandoning them, but it's reducing to 18,000 the number of refugees the United States will let in. It's the denial of the right to seek asylum at Americans' borders. It's this broader assault on America's leadership in the world. And we're seeing how when we step away from our leadership role, how people around the world suffer and how we're made weaker as a nation.
I'd like to go forward with what you're talking about, but I think it's valuable to go back for a moment to the Kurds. And in a simple history lesson, will you map what the Kurds' position and alliance had been so that we again see how dramatically it's changed and why it changed in the last 6
Kurds,
days?
The Kurds, both in northern Iraq and in northwestern Syria, were our chief allies, the West's chief allies in the fighting and the destruction of the Islamic State. One of the greatest threats, not just to regional security, but to global security in the last 20 years. And they were ferocious and effective allies. At the same time, they were using the breathing space created by an American security blanket to create a stable and democratic society. And northwestern Syria had become a place where Syrians from the rest of Syria trying to escape Bashar al-Assad and the war were coming to find rest and refuge and security. And in fact, this is one of my great concerns going forward as well, is that one of the reasons why the Turkish government has invaded northwestern Syria is it wants to now turn around and dump millions of Syrian refugees who are safe in Turkey right now into that war zone. Mm. And when I'm listening to Kurdish exile friends of mine in Berlin or Syrian refugees in Turkey, this is their greatest fear, that their friends and relatives will be forcibly repatriated, which is against international law, back into Syria, back into dangerous conditions, but also back into a part of Syria that they aren't from. Most of these refugees are urban. Northwestern Syria is largely rural. So we're looking at the expansion of suffering because of this inexplicable and irrational move by this current president.
So the deal with the devil that the Kurds mm-hmm. needed to make, what was it and why did they make it?
Well, the commander-in-chief of Kurdish forces put it very plainly in an op-ed in Foreign Policy. He said, look, if I have to choose between genocide and compromise, I'm going to choose compromise. And they're now allowing both Russian forces, primarily for military police, but also Syrian soldiers into areas which they haven't been able to go in the last 5 years. And so this important and hesitating steps towards a democratic alternative in Syria under Kurdish leadership is now going to evaporate. And the safety and the security that accompany that will as well. But here's the important thing. We turned our back on people who were embracing many of the values that we find important: democracy, women's empowerment, children's education, the safety and security of refugees. We turned our back on those people and forced them into the hands of the Syrians and their chief supporters, the Russians and the Iranians. So, qui bono? And it's not us as a people, and it's certainly not the people of Syria.
I used a phrase earlier in the show that's being used by people, and that is that ISIS is now back at the table.
Absolutely.
And I think there's instant fear in just mm-hmm. hearing that word ISIS, that mm-hmm. acronym. To what degree is ISIS back or growing back into power?
Right. So it's both. We have to think about both ISIS and Al-Qaeda, as we say in America. First, the Kurds had created sort of prison camps in which both ISIS fighters and their family supporters who were not being allowed back into European countries or other parts of the world where they had come from to fight in Syria and Iraq, they were guarding them with the support of the American military and trying to adhere to international standards in terms of protection. As Turkey invades northwestern Syria, the people guarding it and the resources necessary to protect those people and also keep them in these prison camps of the Kurdish military are having to flee to the front line. And we've seen already escapes. We've seen people beginning to disperse from these camps out into the communities, and they'll be bringing their ideology and their military training and their organization with them. But that's only part of it. Turkey supports Islamist militias in Syria as well. Their death squads, their militia, these are people that we, if we looked objectively at them, would fall into the same ideological camp as Al-Qaeda and ISIS. So Turkey is empowering the very people we sought to destroy in the wars that the Kurds were our allies in.
You are listening to Dr. Keith Wattenpaugh, professor and founding director of human rights studies at UC Davis. You have 250-plus students in human rights classes and courses at UC Davis.
Actually, we have closer to 400 this
400?
Fall.
Tell me about their conversation with you and the classroom discussion that's happening right now.
Well, they came to me on yesterday morning, and they said, can you tell us what's happening in Syria? And when I look at them, and I mean, we talked about it. We took time out from class. It was a genuine request, and we want to use this opportunity to update and involve our students in what's going on. And they wouldn't be taking human rights studies courses if they weren't wanting to make a difference. And I look at them, and I find myself at a loss to explain this abandonment of core principles and values. You know, the United States is supposed to be the world leader in the protection and promotion of human rights. The best example recently is just the collapse of the refugee ceiling. The United States used to take in close to 100,000 of the world's most vulnerable refugees every year. And I don't care, under Republicans, under Democrats. In fact, Ronald Reagan admitted more refugees than any other American president since the beginning of the refugee regime in the 1950s. And we have to try to help our students understand that that this is not the only path, that there's a different path that we can take. And they're there to learn about it, to explore it, to challenge it. But I look at them and I have a real confidence in the future, because I see in them both the smarts and the savvy and the commitment that will return us to this other direction, this other path. And so as much as I oftentimes am very distressed by the things that we talk about in class, and also see the promises that I believe were made to us when we were younger about what the world was supposed to look like, I know that they will have the tools and the talents necessary to bring us back in the proper direction. So it's good sometimes in terms of that.
In your work over the years in evolving and growing the Human Rights Studies program and inviting speakers and guests from all over the world, you've also connected with so many students from the Middle East, refugees in camps, people who were having to start a new life. I'm hearing in some reports on NPR outlets and other places that there is a deep discouragement that people in the first maybe displacement, the first fleeing, had energy to go forth and keep their studies going, resume their life. But now this new wave is imposing something different on the spirit and the psyches of people. What about being a double refugee or double or triple displacement?
Well, most people are displaced four or five times before they leave their country as a refugee. And we're certainly seeing that dynamic happen again in Syria, where many people had fled more violent and war-torn parts of the country to the relative safety and security of northwestern Syria, and now they're on the road again. But what's different now is that the countries that were willing to take in refugees have closed their borders. So Syria, Lebanon, Jordan will no longer take refugees from Syria. And in fact, all of these countries are working on ways to forcibly push the refugees back into Syria. And that's what's really disheartening, is that for 7 years there was a war, it was brutal, there was the hope that a kind of new Syria could emerge in the region, that people could go home and rebuild their countries. And that's just not happening. And you have to feel for them. I mean, you have young people who were in their early 20s when the war began, and now they're in their 30s. They're supposed to be starting families and having children of their own, and it doesn't happen. And this is a story that's not just about Syrians. I mean, you have refugees from other conflicts around the world who are unable to move on because the international system has not responded to the fact that there are 65 million displaced people around the world, and we haven't figured out a way to help them and assist them. And, you know, we've utterly failed as a country to effectively address this, and there's nothing that's happening currently in Washington that seems to be that there's nothing on the table that will be effective in addressing any of these problems. So we're at a really tough time, and I think in our collective history, in terms of human displacement and need.
I just talked to political strategist Mike Madrid, and he called it the Syria debacle. He said foreign policy is being performed on whimsy, and he raised up the idea of America in question about what its role is in the world. Will you say something about that? And to what degree is this going to be an important discussion in the debate tonight or the ongoing campaign?
So I'll share with you that we just, in my upper division human rights course, talked about the role of Eleanor Roosevelt in the establishment of the modern human rights regime. Americans were there at the beginning of human rights. We were the country that led the way in the wake of the destruction of World War II. And it was part of our global leadership, was to take our values and try to not impose them, but persuade people around the world that this is what we're trying to do. There's been terrible things in the intervening years, but still, that has always been one of the core principles of American foreign policy and our democratic practice. What the president did undermined that, and truly is a debacle. But, you know, we can, there's a bunch of other ones as well that we could talk about. What I'm hoping to see in the debate tonight is the Democratic candidates reflect on what should America's role be in the world, and how that should express core American values, how to bring it back. So just like we need to reset our values or return to certain core values domestically, it's important, I think, for the Democrats to understand and voice the fact that our foreign policy, our military policy, should always be an extension of our beliefs and our values at home. And right now, there's a radical disconnect between those two things. And we have to get back on track. And that's what I'm looking forward to hearing tonight.
Can what's happening in Syria right now be undone?
I think that we're at a, within the next 48 hours, it could be undone. But that would take a complete sea change on the part of the administration, where there's an announcement that American military forces will continue to be present in the region. Probably the imposition of a no-fly zone combined with an incentive towards Turkey on the economic, in the economic realm. I mean, sanctions have already been proposed to pull back. But once the Russian and Syrian forces make contact with the Turkish forces in any substantive way, it's over. And we will have ceded, and we will have ceded any possibility of American influence in the region, primarily to Russia and Iran.
And that's the question here: is President Trump's withdrawal of troops putting Russia in the position of being the full beneficiary, even bigger than Turkey?
Right. I mean, Russia really is the unambiguous winner of this moment. But it will also reap the whirlwind. I mean, we're these events will set off unforeseen circumstances and really chaos that I don't think even the Russians are prepared to handle.
None of us likes to feel helpless. Mm-hmm. Here we are in Northern California, Western Nevada, in a much different daily life than what's happening there. But what can we do?
Well, I think one of the things that we can really think about doing is pushing our government and the Congress to push back really hard against the administration in terms of refugee admissions and also humanitarian support abroad. I think that's one very concrete measure we can do, and I'd like to see our congressional representatives do that. You know, this is not admitting refugees in the United States has historically not been a partisan issue. It's been supported on both sides of the aisle, and I think that we could certainly return to that. And that's something that we can do as citizen voters. We can push our people to do it. The other is that it's important for Americans, I think, to really understand the connection between who we are as a people and then how we're perceived and our role abroad. And one of the things I think that we need to reestablish is that we are staunch allies to those who also correspond with us in terms of our values and our beliefs and our support of human rights. And then also to distance ourselves effectively from those powers abroad that do not support those, and to not build policy around sort of corruption and business interests, but rather around principles and values.
There's an opportunity this weekend for some conversation, some great food, just some gathering. And I always like to promote those places where people can come together. It is the Armenian Food Festival weekend.
That's right, the Armenian Food Festival.
So Friday, I said this weekend, but it's Friday, October 25th from 4 to 10, and then Saturday, October 26th. It happens at the St. James Armenian Apostolic Church. There's music and dance. This has been a tradition since 1947.
I know, it's wonderful.
Celebrating 100 years of Armenians in Sacramento. So again, whether it's the classroom level and students reaching out to you or gathering for some tradition, some celebration of culture, I think there are ways to feel active in what's
Absolutely.
Going on in the world.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Thank you so much for your
Thank
time
you, Beth.
And your perspective. That is Dr. Keith Wattenpah from UC Davis. We'll post a link to some of the work that his students and his human rights studies program is doing. That's at capradio.org/insight. This is Insight on Cap Radio.